hourglass. These are the songs of our lives. And welcome to the latest episode of Songs of Our Lives. I'm Brad Rose. I am an artist, a composer, a writer, the founder of Foxy Digitalist, and someone who thinks about music and sound far more than is healthy. Each week, I invite on a guest to talk about the songs and the music that has meant a lot to them and left its mark. Previous guests include Maurice, David Grubbs, Ilyas Ahmed, Claire Rousset, Jalen. The list goes on, but this week, I have an actual beam of light on the show. I don't know. But it's Thor Harris, who I, you know, doesn't need much of an introduction. Thor's a legend, and I'm so excited to have him on. I'm a huge admirer of all that Thor does. I first, like many people, I think became aware of him when he was playing for Swans. And it's, you know, then the more you learn, the more he does. It's just, it's awesome. And so the sort of occasion of inviting him on the show was Thor and Friends, which is his really awesome ensemble. There's so many people in it. I'm not going to name all of them because I think there's like 12 or 16. Well, more, because there's also like a choir, the Unwound Singers, which Unwound Sound Singers, such a great name. They've got a new album called Heathen Spirituals, which is out on Joyful Noise on May 16th. And What a delightful album it is. It's just, it's like, it's joyful, cathartic music. It's like a restrained ecstasy or something. I don't know. There's just something about it that really moved me and grabbed me. And it's built around, I mean, marimba was a big inspiration on this record, and all the movement and like intonations and just melodic, like constantly shifting melodic structures. And it's the kind of music that I love, and it's just done here really well. And I don't know, Thor's great. This was like such a fun episode to do. So check out Heathen Spirituals, and you know, anything else Thor's doing. Yeah, and Thor's in the best band in the world. He's in Water Damage too. So we didn't even talk about that. Come on. All right. Yeah, this was a hell of a lot of fun. I hope you'll enjoy it. My guest today is an artist, a musician, a painter, a composer, percussionist, an instrument builder, and an expert in the art of punching Nazis. It is Thor Harris. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So the new Thor and Friends album, Heathen Spirituals, which I love that title, by the way, really fantastic.
Thank you.
Comes out here on May 16th on Joyful Noise. And I guess to start, one of the things I was really intrigued by was how you all recorded in this empty auditorium. Yeah. And I'm curious, like, what's it like to play like a love song to a room full of empty red seats?
It was pretty neat. I mean, we were up on a big wooden stage in this big empty auditorium, and you get really focused on there were 11 musicians and these gigantic instruments. We had two 4.5 octave marimbas and a vibraphone and a 9-foot Steinway. So you get pretty focused just on that little area, but it is pretty neat to look out into the big chasm of empty seats. And I mean, and that's how they used to record orchestras,
right,
all the time. And my idea behind doing it that way, as opposed to trying to cram us all into a studio, was first that they used to record orchestras that way, and they sound so alive, and they sound, I don't know, there's some ambiance that's captured that I haven't heard Well, we certainly haven't had that in any of our studio records.
Right.
We've used all the studio wizardry that there is. And but this one sounds very different. It just sounds like the band. And the band, the group, is huge now. There's anywhere from like maybe 9 or 10 of us to 17 of us.
Oh, wow.
But there is a core of about 11 members that started playing together after the pandemic, and we got so good at playing together. It just, you know, we got such a good organic magic to the way we played together. It felt a shame to put it in a studio and put headphones on everyone, and
right.
Yeah, so it just seemed like the way to do it. And we had access to empty auditorium because our violin player, Travis Weller, works for University of Texas. Mm. And so he has access to all these big music halls.
It sounds kind of liberating to like record in that environment as compared to like a studio, maybe. That's awesome.
Yeah, studios can feel kind of stifling in a way.
Yeah.
And having everybody there in one room, we all kind of had to get it kind of right, you know, but it's you know, I'm not right. A real stickler about mistakes. I think that some mistakes on records are fine.
Right. For sure. Can you talk a little bit about the marimba? There was in the liner notes or whatever, talked about this marimba that you had gotten as a gift and how it was kind of, I don't know if life-changing is overselling it, but.
No, I think it was. I went to John Congleton's studio. He was at the time in Dallas, and I was recording, I think, some drum parts for his record, and I knew that I was kind of nearing my end with Swans. I needed to do something different. Mm-hmm. And John gave me this marimba. I still have it. I have four now. I brought it home and put it together. I did a bunch of work on it. It needed some work, but, then I just started playing it and kind of have never looked back. Because I could already play vibraphone, and I have been a percussionist since I was about 9 years old. But I never owned a marimba before that. I just sort of plinked around on them when I had access to them. But to have one in your house really is a game changer. And pretty quickly, like there had been a band called Thorin Friends before we put together that ensemble that ended up making the first Thorin Friends record. But pretty quickly after adopting that marimba, marimba became like the central part of that band. It just seemed to be the wellspring from which it all flowed.
Yeah. I also really like that, like this description of your favorite music is doodles. I thought that was really intriguing and something I related to. And I'm kind of curious how you, and like, to me, that gives me a feeling of like playfulness and spontaneity and stuff. And I'm curious how you kind of foster that in within a large ensemble like this.
Yeah. So that idea, that I've been thinking about for, I don't know, at least 10 or 15 years was I noticed that when a group of musicians sets up to rehearse or to play a show or whatever, and maybe there's some dead time before the band leader arrives or before the pressure is on or whatever. Yeah. Musicians will sort of do these things. They'll just start playing together. And if there's like low or no stakes involved, there's like a real sort of playfulness about,
yeah,
about what they'll do. And it's not very self-conscious. It's not very ambitious. It's just, we're just playing because we love these instruments that are in our hands, and we're just playing because we love to play. I mean, the very word play sort of indicates this is just for us. And, and it's just like when you're stuck, say, in an office and you have a pen and you have endless paper, the drawings that you do are just going to be interesting in a way that your other work in that office is not going to be.
Totally.
So I thought, what if we had a band that was just dedicated to harvesting that energy, the energy? And yes, there are forms in Thor and Friends. There are sort of structures, but there's a lot of room within those structures for the entire ensemble to go off its rails and go somewhere different. Or certainly for any individual play. Like, I encourage, like, any of the players, look, if you want to start playing in a different time signature in the middle of this, please, by all means, do. You'll find your way back to us, you know? And
yeah, that's so great. Yeah, I was, earlier this month, I got to play as part of Tetsuya Nakatani's Gong Orchestra.
Wow, and I love Tetsuya.
Oh, man, it was top two or three, like, sound related experience I've had in my life. It was so incredible.
I'm so glad you did that.
Yeah, it was, we were, me and one of my friends who was also in it afterwards, we looked at each other and it's like, I think we just opened up a portal to like another dimension, like through this performance.
Wow. Tetsuya Nakatani is a portal to another dimension.
That is, yes, nailed that.
I mean, to talk to him is magic. Yeah. To see him play is magic. His whole life.
Yes.
He's that guy is, man, he's a spiritual hero of mine.
Yeah. I love that he played solo first, because I'd seen him play solo a couple years ago, which again, one of the best live perform, and it was in someone's garage, which again, it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
But I was thinking about, like, when we first all got there and we're kind of testing out the gongs and trying to figure out which ones felt right to us, it had that, like, those moments, I still remember them, how there was just this lightness to it the doodles. It was like, oh, I wish I had pulled out my phone and just recorded us doing that, because it was wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. It's like that sort of spirit of exploration.
Yeah.
And like low stakes, just experimentation. Yeah, Tetsuya, he's a shaman.
Yeah, every opportunity I ever get to do the Gong Orchestra, I will do, because I was so sore the next day from bowing that like 4-foot gong for an hour.
With a big bass, or with one of his bows.
With one of his bows, yeah. And it was it was incredible. Anyone listening, if you ever get the opportunity to do the Nakatani Gong Orchestra, you will not regret it.
Yeah, or at least listeners out there in podcast land, please go see Tetsuya Nakatani. If that means just watching YouTubes of him play solo, you are in for the musical treat of your life. And you've never seen a musician. If you haven't seen Tetsuya play, you've not seen a musician like that. There's only one of that guy.
There's only one of that guy. Absolutely. Before we get into the songs, I did want to just ask real quick if there was a story behind the name Heathen Spirituals. Like I said, I love that title. And
sometime during my life in Swans, I noticed like our shows would sometimes be 2.5 or 3 hours long, and I could go into them feeling pretty insanely depressed or any number of kinds of awful. But at the end, somehow I felt spiritually cleansed. I might feel exhausted, but there was something about doing that thing for that long that changed my insides. I don't believe in gods or anything like that, although I have a lot of friends who do. And I did when I was a teenager. I think that the reason that we play, I sort of was speaking for the whole group when I chose that title, is like we started playing together, this 11-piece group, right after the pandemic, and after we had had like the stupidest president of our lifetimes for 4 years. This was the first Trump presidency, and we were just coming out of our hovels, you know, just starting to play together again because we were vaccinated, and we really were and still are doing it for our own salvation, our own. Yeah. Because in a band that large and with people from diverse, we're all different ages. I'm 60. The oldest member I think is 63 or 64, and we've had members as young as like 16. So there's a wide age range and a lot of different races and sexual orientations in the band, but they're all, as far as I know, you know, atheist or agnostic. There aren't any evangelical Christians in our band, and so that's why I called us all heathens.
I love it.
And spiritual, just because we're here to for our salvation. And yeah. I mean, the idea was like, let's make music that everyone who's making it gets a lot out of doing it, where it doesn't become so rote that we're just sort of showing up because we have to. That and then if somebody happens to like the music, that's, you know, all the better. But it's mostly a spiritual practice as opposed to, you know, us being entertainers.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome.
Which I love that kind of music too. I love, you know, entertainers.
Well, that's a good segue here, especially for the first question. So we're going to go down the list here. And as always, I'm going to start with, what is the first song that you remember?
You know, I do remember. I am going to probably, if you tell me the questions, I'm going to remember my answers.
Beautiful.
And my answer was I'll Be There by the Jackson 5. And I think that my sister had that record probably around 1971 or two as mm-hmm. a 45 RPM record. And we had a little stereo in the living room, and me and my sister would play that record, and she's 7 years older than me. So she was hipper than me. You know, I was just a little kid, and she would have been maybe 13 at that point. And, I just loved the Jackson 5. Like my first musical memories were all of like Motown, soul, R&B kind of stuff from the early 70s. That's what was on the radio.
Right. Yeah. I'll Be There. It doesn't get much better than this. Like, it's what a song.
Yeah. And,
to be one of your formative memories. That's awesome. What's a song? So this one you didn't have an answer for, but I thought that was interesting. A song that makes you cry, or like, is there a song that makes you feel like a certain, that type of way? Maybe if it doesn't actually make you cry, or does music just not do that? Get you there?
No, music certainly has at different times in my life made me cry, or gotten me to that sort of gut-wrenching place. And I know that this is kind of this is an answer to a later question, but Dust in the Wind, because it's so the song by Kansas, because it's just so, it's so unapologetically hopeless. That song kind of does that for me. There's no redemption. There's no no, this is it. There is nothing. There's no hope.
Right. All we are is dust in the wind. I mean, it doesn't get much more.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. Gosh, that was, yeah, I remember learning to play that on guitar when I was very young.
Wow. Yeah, you must have been a good guitar player.
No, I didn't play it well. But I can remember playing, like, yeah, I couldn't play it now probably because I don't play guitar as much. But do you think of yourself as, like, a crier?
Let's see. Well, I have gut-wrenching clinical depression. And so I do certainly cry on the inside. But one thing about having depression, you sort of learn to fake it and get by right. in the world. And you know, there are people, like, around people with whom I really trust, I talk sure. about depression, you know, because I don't want to go through it alone. And I certainly don't want anyone else to go through it alone. Right. So I'm vocal about it. I talk about it, but out in the world, I do a fair amount of just faking it to, yeah. you know, to just because I
feel that
I don't want to bring everyone I come in contact with into that yeah. World of misery. But yes, I do cry, but it's often at, you know, the places you would think, like my friends' funerals. I have a lot of friends and, you know, loved ones mm-hmm. That are a lot older than me, and so I go to their funerals, I do cry at, you know, losing loved ones. You would think I would be really good at it. My dad died when I was 10, so I started early, but, I don't know. It just still, it's just like, my God, I can't believe I can't text him anymore. His number's still in my phone. Why can't I call him? This is just such an injustice.
We were talking before we got on there. I was talking about my grandma. So, like, the house that I live in is my grandmother's house. Like, we bought it from her when she moved in with my parents. And there, I have moments every once in a while where I'll be in a certain room or something, and it'll spark a memory of her.
And it's of course.
That feeling of it's heavy. I mean, I don't know that you know, I don't think I ever want to get used to it. You know?
Yeah.
Then I'd be a little. I'd be like, geez, am I dead inside?
I mean, I guess, like, my mom died in 2017, and I think I've sort of processed that grief in a much more healthy way
right.
than I did when I was 10, when my dad right. died. But you don't, there's not really any exactly getting used to it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's part of life, I guess. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
Well, to brighten spirits a little bit, what's a song that puts you in a better mood?
Man, you know, there's so many. That Daft Punk record... what is that one called? There's a the last Daft Punk record with the one with the live band, Random Access Memories.
Yes.
That record, like, almost any song on that record puts me in a better mood. What was my answer on this?
Kraftwerk's The Model.
Okay. Almost anything by Kraftwerk will just, like, lift my spirits. Did you know that there's really just two guys in Kraftwerk that were full-time Kraftwerk players, Florian and Rolf. They were both like percussionists, mostly. One of them played flute pretty well, but they were classically trained percussionists.
Wow. I mean, and in some ways, it makes sense. Like, I can see that when you think about the sort of rhythmic quality of their music and, like, the way they use synthesizers, that
yeah,
it makes a lot of sense, but that is still, when you think about their senses of melody and stuff like that, it's pretty remarkable.
Yeah. That's kind of my, if I have to pick a favorite band in the world, it's Kraftwerk.
Yeah, it's I love Kraftwerk, and I love this song, like the model. There's so much to love about this song. Like the synth lead is so, just gets in your blood.
Yeah.
And it's kind of silly, but it's not corny. Like it doesn't, you know. And so I don't know.
It's kind of funny, but there's also something kind of menacing about it.
Yeah. Yeah. It somehow rides this balance so well that, one of the things I always love about it is how, like, they're musically, it feels so pristine and like almost perfect in a way, but then like Rolf's vocals aren't. And I think,
like
I love his vocal, but you know, I mean, it's like that, again, those sort of counterbalances that it just one of the greatest bands ever.
Exactly. Yeah, he's decidedly not, like, he doesn't have some beautiful voice, and the lyrics are just weird, and
that band
just couldn't be more perfect for me.
Yeah, well, speaking of, you know, perfect, greatest of all time, what is objectively the greatest song of all time?
Well, I think that my answer on this was Steve Reich, Music for 18 Musicians. And the reason I'm saying this, dear listeners, if you've never heard that piece of music, maybe it's like too much of a mouthful to bite off at one time, because it is an hour long. But what I love about it, and why I think it's the greatest recording, and this is just me, it starts, so I love prog rock because of the time that I grew up, and prog rock helped me to develop my musical skills. It demanded that I develop kind of almost superhuman musical skills, because that music is difficult to play. You know, I grew up thinking I wanted to be a prog rock star. Well, by the time I grew up, prog rock was just laughably over. Nobody wanted to hear that anymore. But what Music for 18 Musicians has that prog rock doesn't have is it starts in this one place, and without a jarring chord change or anything, like, that's what people hate about prog rock. It's just so jarring from one thing to another.
It's like a zigzag.
Music for 18 Musicians sounds fairly simple and very repetitious. It is changing all the time, but oftentimes you don't even notice that it's changing. So your nervous system gets tuned to this one repetitious thing. Your nervous system comes to depend on that. Then something has changed, but you haven't even noticed it. So it's like gently kind of delivering you through these different movements. And there are movements. Like if you've looked at the music for it, it's there are a lot of different movements, and they even have names. But I just love music like that. That's why, and I don't think that I mentioned this anywhere else in my answers, there's a band called The Necks, N-E-C-K-S, from Australia.
Great band.
And that's my favorite live band right now. The Necks do that so masterfully well. If you just drop the needle at one place and then you drop it somewhere else, wow, everything's really different. But if you just listen continuously, you can't really tell that much changing. Nothing's going to change too drastically, but very slyly, very much not like prog rock, they're taking you to some new place, and you don't even know. You got in the car in Tulsa, and now you're in Shanghai. How did you get here?
I think that's one of the things. I mean, its length, probably, like you said, that maybe intimidates people, but it's, for such an intricate and complicated piece of music, it seems so accessible because it's the saying about, like, you know, like the frog in boiling water. It's like, it just slowly turns up the heat and you don't realize at the end, like, you're just on fire and somewhere you've never been. And
Exactly. Incredible. I mean, I may be just living in some fantasy world where everyone is a super music nerd. But I really do think you could almost play that piece of music like for anyone and have them at least find it pretty interesting.
I think so too.
And exciting.
Yeah. No, I haven't. So I have an 11-year-old daughter and she's interested in music. She's learning to play the cello this year. And I've played her some stuff and I'm going to have to play this for her and see what she does.
Yeah. That's so exciting.
Yeah. I keep saying to people, I'm like, I got to figure out the right time to like show her Arthur Russell.
Yes. Yeah. He was a good cello player.
Yeah. It's like, here's what your teachers won't show you. You can do with the cello.
Right.
But, the next question is, and this is another one you didn't have an answer for, which again, I think is interesting, is a song you used to love, but you heard it recently or think about it now and it doesn't really do it for you.
You know what? I was really racking my brain. And the thing about it is, about this question for me, most of the music, even if I do come to realize this is a truly horrendous song, like those of us who grew up in the 70s, we like Kiss, the band Kiss.
Sure.
Now their music is really stupid.
Yeah.
Subjective. It is stupid music, but we like it because it meant
right.
And that like most music that I at some that meant something to me at some point, it doesn't really change.
Yeah.
So I couldn't think, you know what I did? So as I mentioned before, I really prog rock was really important to me. Mm-hmm. So I was exploring the world of Genesis. Recently, I was sort of re-exploring a lot of those records that I listened to a billion times in my probably early teens. And yeah. I listened to a live record that was made shortly after Peter Gabriel quit. And it's called Seconds Out. I did not think it was very good. And, you know, there's a lot of things to not like about prog.
Sure.
But yeah, that record didn't do much for me. I mean, it's unusual that I'll take one of those trips down memory lane and then just decide to cut it short. But that record, I do think that Phil Collins did become a pretty amazing singer. But you know, my favorite of those Genesis records were the ones with Peter Gabriel on them.
Yeah.
Before he quit.
Well, on the subject of prog, what is the song that people can't stand it, people hate it, whoever these people are, but you love it?
Yeah. My answer to that is Yes, is Siberian Katru. And the reason I answered that is because it's just so obnoxiously prog. I mean, it's it's just like a real sort of virtuoso wank fest. and if I heard it today, I would just think, what? Why? Why must you show me that you did your classical training and you practiced endlessly. You were not selected for the basketball team, clearly. So yeah. You had plenty of time to stay home and practice while the other kids were out.
Right. So it's time for the guitar Olympics instead.
Yeah. but because I found that music when like I developed pretty quickly as a young drummer. So, but like I started, say, let's say I started taking drum lessons at 9. By the time I was 12, I was, you know, I had a drum set and I was playing these rock beats and I was pretty quickly beginning to think, wow, these all kind of have the same beat. If I can do this, you know, this one beat, this is pretty much the whole catalog. But then along comes prog rock, and suddenly things get way more interesting.
Yeah.
And challenging.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And challenging. So it was like, you know, I got into Rush also, probably for many of the same reasons, because it had like the power of rock music and of, you know, of sort of proto metal, which Led Zeppelin had, and Led Zeppelin played a lot with odd meters, but there was a lot more going on too. And they were like they were very thoughtful guys. I understand if somebody listens and there's this kind of joke that the band Rush preserved a lot of boys' virginity in the 70s, because if they were sitting around with their friends listening to Rush, they definitely were not getting laid.
Yeah. Yeah, that's yeah.
But it sort of made me, I don't know, it kept me studious. It kept me.
No, it makes sense.
Striving to get better at my instrument and.
Well, sitting around listening to Rush as a teenager isn't going to get you late, but romantic songs might. So, what's the most romantic song?
Oh, let's see. I think I put "Mated" by Utopia.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love Utopia. I love Todd Rundgren. I think that guy can really deliver a love song.
I love this pick, because there's something about this song that feels almost like, I don't know, like animalistic or like primordial or something.
Yeah.
And I really like that about it, like, because it's also sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. I think maybe I don't remember who wrote this song, because in that band, everyone in the band writes songs. I think Todd writes probably most of them, but it seems like they all were they all contributed in that band Utopia. And I just love that band, all the different iterations of it. And that record, it's called POV, as in like point of view. It came out around, I think, 85, and it's just a gorgeous record.
It's a record that's really held up. What is a song that changed your perspective on an artist, either for better or for worse?
I love this question. So my answer was North Star by Robert Fripp. And the reason, now I have all the respect in the world for Daryl Hall, the singer. Yeah. Of Hall and Oates, but from where I was in the late 70s, Hall and Oates were so ubiquitous on the radio. Right. It was just, that music was thought of as like wallpaper. If I visit it now, I think, oh my God, this is such well-crafted pop music.
Sure.
I can, because it doesn't sound like what is pop music now. And a lot of those were produced by Todd Rundgren. But a lot of those Hall and Oates records. But here's this weirdo, Robert Fripp, who heard Daryl Hall, singer of Hall and Oates, and recognized this guy has an amazing voice and an amazing control of that voice. And he puts him on this weird sort of art rock record, singing this gorgeous, sweet song, North Star. It's just so gorgeous.
Yeah. And Daryl Hall just crushes it.
Oh my God. Yes.
I think I read that this is like it was the first take. He just like one take, which I don't know if it's true. I'm going to choose to believe it's true.
I'll choose that path with you. I'm going to start saying that.
Yeah. It wouldn't surprise me. Like, he's that good.
He's so good. That guy's such a good singer.
Yeah, no, and it's funny too, because I knew this song, and it wasn't until years after I didn't even realize that it was Daryl Hall until like years after I'd heard the song. And then I was like, oh, and it was, I kind of had like, I had an appreciation for Hall & Oates, but was maybe just didn't really care. I don't know. It was, but it gave me it changed my perspective on him too. Like, I totally can relate to that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love that. It's such a great, weird song. What are your favorite lyrics?
I think my answer to this one was Swan's Failure.
Yeah.
And similar to Dust in the Wind, this song just offers a tale of complete despair and defeat without offering you a shred of hope. There's no, this is going to get better. It's just complete, embrace of the hopelessness of it all.
Yeah.
And at the time that I was listening to that song over and over and over and over, I wasn't in the Swans yet. I hadn't even started playing with Angels of Light yet. I'd started playing with Angels of Light. That's Michael Girard's band that he had after he broke up Swans in 97 or whenever that was.
Yeah.
He formed a band, Angels of Light. And I played on the first Angels of Light record, because I wrote him a letter and said, hey, I would be happy to play in your band if you ever need a drummer, percussionist. But that song is just such a deep dive into just complete despair.
Yeah. Relentless.
Yeah, it's relentless. I think Pink Floyd has some songs like that too, but that song and Dust in the Wind really do it just so well.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. All right, what is what's the song that you can or have listened to the most?
I think that it must be something from Kraftwerk.
Yeah, you just have anything Kraftwerk.
Yeah, Kraftwerk. So my history with Kraftwerk was back when there were 8-track tapes. For those of you too young to remember, an 8-track tape was a kind of cassette tape, in that there are reels and they're in a little plastic box. This plastic box was about 1 inch by 4 inches by, let's say, 8 inches. And you would slide it into a slot and there were 4 different programs. Yeah. Anyway, for some reason, I was at a junk sale with my mom when I was pretty young, and Autobahn came out on a red 8-track, and I just liked that it was red. So that's cool. And I just thought, wow, this music is from somewhere else. This music is not from coastal suburban Texas. I didn't know where Germany was, but that music sounded weird. It was made by robots, and it was about something called the Autobahn, and it was just odd. And that really stuck with me. I mean, and now I listen to any Kraftwerk I can get my hands on. There's just not, you know, there's not like tons of bootlegs of them or anything that are available. There's a couple of live records. Those are great. I just love that band.
Yeah.
And like your earlier question, what is music that will put me in a good mood, that will change my mood for the better? Kraftwerk just does that. There's something about that sort of machine kind of rhythm that really resonates with my brain.
Yeah, I get it. I feel similarly. I don't know. There's something about it's kind of like grounding or calming or something about that repetition.
Yeah.
What is the song? What is the last song you completely fell in love with?
Oh, Chapel Rowan's. Is it called "You Got It, Babe"? Or
"Good Luck, Babe"?
Good Luck, Babe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Such a banger.
Yeah, it's such a banger, and just her vocal performance on it is so good. She's just, you know, she's just really exciting.
Yeah,
there's a lot, like she just reveals a lot of herself in her music, which is not always what pop music is about. Mm-hmm. Pop music is often just about a feeling or excitement or sex or something, but she's just, there's something really soulful about her about her music. And she too, like you and I, comes, I think she's from Missouri or something.
Somewhere in there.
Conservative, but she's, you know, just clawing to get out of that place. And I think Pink Pony Club is a great song too.
I agree. It, like on Good Luck, it's just such a small thing, but I just love how it ends with like the tape players running out of battery. I love that so much.
I can't remember the name of that producer, but I heard an interview with him and he seems like a neat guy.
Yeah, that's so cool. All right, two questions left. What is the song that means the most to you? And it's not necessarily because of the song itself, but you associate it with something or someone or an experience. And so it's the one.
Oh, gosh, I don't remember what I answered on this one.
Paul McCartney, Silly Love Songs.
Oh, okay. Okay, right. So this one, it's not. So this one, this song means a lot to me because I fell in love with this girl when I was probably in sixth or seventh grade. And Silly Love Songs was on the radio all the time then. And that she didn't know this, but that was our song. And she was just my friend. We would hang out in the neighborhood. And she was a couple of years older than me. And her name was Tracy Liska. Well, Tracy Liska then in college, my second year of college, she became my roommate. And it was just strictly platonic. By that time, I had sort of rethought my relationship to Tracy Liska, and we stayed friends, you know, through high school and all. And it just became a friendship. But at that time I was madly in love with her. So still when I hear that song, it I can still feel that insane passion that I had for Tracy Liska. She's died now. I don't know exactly what she died of. She kind of drank herself to death. But she was just a soulful, awesome person.
I remember those sixth or seventh grade
crushes.
So
powerful. And now when I hear that song, which I really love a lot of Paul McCartney's stuff after the Beatles, you know, even more than some Beatles stuff. Beatles was the problem with Beatles for me. It was so ubiquitous on the radio, like Hall and Oates. It was like, oh, it's the Beatles again. Right. Okay. Right. You know, if this is like the template for all of pop music, then where's the margins? Let's, can we hear something that's not exactly not trying to be the Beatles.
Right.
You know, so when somebody's like puts together a band that's very inspired by the Beatles, I think, oh God,
again? It's like, do we need more of this? Yeah, come on. It's
been so done. And the Beatles did it really well. So how far are you going to go with this?
Chances are you're not going to do it any better. So,
right.
Well, last question. What is your favorite song? It's a repeat answer.
But I think it's Music for 18 Musicians. By Steve Reich. Again, of course it's going to be something that's enormously long, and and that's where the band Thorn Friends is going. I want to make the music and I think every artist should work this way. I want to make the music that I want to hear, like that I want to discover. I want to make the record that someone hands me and goes, here, man, you gotta hear this. And what I'm into lately, and you can't do this in a 5-minute song, is the piece of music that starts you in one place and over some long period of time, you don't notice it, but it delivers you to this other place, like a long meditation. Meditation kind of takes a while, and there's a reason. There aren't really shortcuts.
I love that. Yeah. Well, I feel like you guys are on your way. Like this new record is.
Oh, thank you.
That's wonderful.
Thank you. I think we're getting there. I think we're going to get more. We're going to sound more and more like we're supposed to sound like it. Awesome. And I think in the near future, I think our live shows are getting better. The pieces are getting longer. And when I think I was just sort of insecure after I'd been playing in the Swans for 500 years. Here I was like playing this quiet, dainty, gentle music, and I was like, I need to do something to keep it interesting. And I'm feeling less of that kind of pressure now, and I'm just sort of relaxing into what I think where my strengths really lie. So we're getting there, but thank you so much for listening to it.
Absolutely. Well, so record's out on May 16th. You guys have shows coming up or anything that you want to mention?
We have a record release show in Austin on May 23rd at Museum of Human Achievement.
Hey, that's my birthday, so that's a great day for a show. Yeah,
happy almost your birthday.
Thank you.
How old will you be on May 23rd?
46.
All right, you're looking great.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I'm feeling good. Life is, I mean, the world may be crumbling, but in other ways, life's pretty good. So
it's
a weird dichotomy.
Yeah.
But all right. So May 23rd, and everybody should check out the record. Thanks for doing this. This was a lot of fun, Thor.
It was so fun. Thank you for the opportunity.
Once again, thank you. Thank you. Thank you to Thor Harris. Listen to all his picks. The link in the show notes. Pick up a copy of Heathen Spirituals. Give it a listen. Out now, or out Friday, as of this recording, on Joyful Noise Recordings. And yeah, thank you all for listening. Of course, please leave a rating and review so we can engage with the algorithm. I don't know. Fuck over the algorithm. I don't know. I mean, the algorithm fucks us over, everybody. I mean, it's, you know, let's be honest here. And if you really want to support the show, support the cause, Fox Digitalis, if you like it, for as little as $3 a month, patreon.com/FoxDigitalis, get you in the door, get you some fun stuff. And honestly, that ongoing support really helps keep things going. Thank you to everybody who has signed up. And yeah, that's it. Until next time, just keep on listening to whatever the hell you want.